The Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order, and I will note this meeting is taking place under House Rule 10.01. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Present.
Houseman, present. Vice Chair Howard?
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Tice?
Tice, present.
Tice, present. Representative Agbaje?
Present.
Agbaje, present. Representative Bliss? Representative Bliss?
Present.
Bliss, present. Representative Gomez?
Present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hassan?
Hassan is present.
Hassan, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Herr?
Present.
Herr, present. Representative Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Juergens, present. Representative Olson? Representative Barr?
Barr, present.
Barr, present. Representative Ryer?
Ryer, present.
Ryer, present. And Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Members, we have two sets of minutes to approve this week. The first is the meeting minutes from our joint hearing on Friday, February 11. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair. So moved.
Members, any corrections from that the joint hearing? If not, please unmute. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. The next set of minutes for approval is from our last meeting on Thursday, February 17. Representative Howard, would you like to move approval of those minutes as well?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Members, are there any corrections to that set of minutes? Seeing none, please unmute. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and those minutes are adopted. Members, I'm the author of the bill we're about to hear, and so I'm going to hand over the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Howard for the presentation of this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3244, as introduced, be laid over. And would you like me to proceed with it?
Yes, Madam Chair, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, today's bill is a part of the Homes for All Coalition agenda, and I am delighted to present that. We have the co-chairs, Annie Shapiro, I know, is here. She won't be testifying, but she is available for questions should you have any of her. This is the first part of this is $400 million in appropriation bonds, housing infrastructure bonds. You recall my talking about this as a new tool in 2014. GO bonds could only be used for public infrastructure, and so this tool enables us to partner with nonprofits. So we leverage a good bit of private money as well. I think $3 for every $1 of state money, something like that. Housing infrastructure bonds fund the development of affordable rental and homeownership opportunities. Includes supportive housing, senior housing, manufactured home acquisition, and infrastructure improvement, as well as affordable home ownership opportunities. You've heard Minnesota Housing say that they say no to three of every four requests that they get for this funding. And so we're making a more aggressive ask this year. More funding is needed to make an impact on our housing shortage. There's also a deeper affordability as a new eligible usage. Our greatest need in our state is for deeply affordable housing, and this eligible use will target the deepest affordability. And we've always said permanent supportive housing is our best model, but not all housing requires those supportive services, and that is made clear here. The tool will help serve people up to 50% AMI, but with a specific focus on people at or below 30%. $100 million in GO bonds for public housing. 95% of the public housing is over 35 years old. Housing authorities often don't have the resources to invest in critical repairs like roof repair, upgrading heating, investing in security. The need is more like 180 million, but 100 million will go a long way. So this will help ensure people living in public housing live in safe, healthy, and stable housing. And Mr. Chair, we have some testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll move to our first testifier, who is, hold on a second, lost my agenda here for the moment. Excuse me, Madam Chair. We have Wendy Underwood from Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis up first. Ms. Underwood.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. It is a real privilege to be with you today. For the record, my name is Wendy Underwood. I'm Vice President of Social Justice Advocacy and Engagement at Catholic Charities St. Paul in Minneapolis. I am really pleased to be here today to speak in favor of House File 3244 on behalf of Homes for All and for the hundreds of residents at Catholic Charities housing sites who have a permanent home because of housing infrastructure bonds, and especially on a day like today, as I look out my window. I am also pleased to see in the bill a preference to those projects at or below 30% AMI. As Chair Houseman said, the opportunity here for truly deeply affordable housing is very real, and we are excited to see that. Catholic Charities is known in the region for providing emergency shelter services, but we are also one of the largest providers of permanent supportive housing with 950 current apartments rented to Minnesotans who have experienced long-term homelessness or have other health and physical challenges. Many are veterans. We are excited to share that thanks to this committee's commitment to HIBs and the hard work of local partners, we will be opening a new location this spring. With the support of HIVs, we were able to purchase a former nursing home facility just outside of downtown Minneapolis in the beautiful Elliott Park neighborhood. Endeavor's residents will replace our longstanding site in downtown Minneapolis, known as Exodus, and will add an additional nearly 100 deeply affordable apartments to our total number of apartments available. Endeavor's residence also provides supportive services to help a person's ability to be and stay independent. This includes case management services and other assistance. This neighborhood is very close to amenities like transportation, social services, jobs, and healthcare, the things that our residents, just like you and me, need and value every day. Our residents are full-time renters. They sign leases with the rights and expectations of a typical market rate apartment. I want to note that it was our residents, our current residents at Exodus, and our staff who collaborated to choose the new name Endeavors that is inclusive and welcoming to all individuals of all backgrounds. Life isn't always linear, and Endeavors honors each resident's journey. We're really proud of that. We were able to use HIBs to rehab this existing older building. No deconstruction was needed or no major physical additions were added. We converted nursing home rooms into efficiency and single room occupancy apartments. We converted nursing stations into community rooms and shared kitchen spaces. And we only had to update the large commercial kitchen. We did not have to build anything new. We made improvements to HVAC, the roof, et cetera, the things that are often necessary in a rehab with an older building. But we are very excited that this was a clear, a successful reuse of an existing site. The site is large and presented a number of opportunities for us. And while HIBs can only be used for the purchase and rehab for the housing units, the commitment from this committee in the state of Minnesota helped us to secure additional funds from Hennepin County and the city of Minneapolis, as well as our many generous donors, so that we could purchase the entire site and convert some of it into three very important projects in addition to our nearly 200 apartments. Those three things located at our site is a 30-room recuperative care center for people experiencing homelessness who no longer need emergency room care. This relieves pressure and costs on our ERs while providing people with a safe and dignified place to recuperate. It's a very successful program that we run in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Really excited for this. We will also be the site for a permanent community clinic providing healthcare, psychiatric services, and more to people who meet a certain income limit. This will be a new asset to the neighborhood. And finally, we will be bringing home all of our administrative services and our aging and disability services team. All of these entities have been scattered around our sites for years, and we are all coming to Elliott Park, which equates to over 200 full-time jobs we are bringing to the neighborhood. We could not have purchased the building and added these valuable services without housing infrastructure bonds. It's worth noting, I think this is really important, this body approved an investment in HIVs at the end of your 2019 legislative session. We were awarded HIVs that November, completed the funding with Hennepin County and Minneapolis in December, and began renovations in the fall of 2020 so that we can start moving in this spring. And while this chain of events took a lot of work and just enough luck, it was possible because of the public-private partnership that started with this body and that HIV award. We reused an existing building. We are bringing 200 jobs to a new neighborhood. We are hosting innovative healthcare opportunities. And most importantly, we are providing nearly 175 truly, deeply affordable apartments to Minnesotans. At Catholic Charities, we talk a lot about the power of home and how home is more than four walls and a roof, but it is safety and dignity. It is a sense of peace and opportunity. It is stability. Our new Endeavors residents for Minnesotans who have experienced homelessness, many of them veterans and with physical disabilities, through housing infrastructure bonds and the commitment of this committee in the state of Minnesota, they too will get to have that power of home in just a few short months, while we are adding a net 100 deeply affordable apartments to the region this spring, it is clear from the demands of our emergency shelters that the significant need for deeply affordable housing is only growing. The investment proposed here today would make a very real difference. I encourage you to support House File 3244. Thank you so much for your leadership and for this opportunity.
Thank you. Next up, we have Sarah Harris from AON.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and members. Also, thank you, Ms. Underwood, for your testimony. I echo it completely. I am Sarah Harris. I'm the Executive Vice President of Strategy, Partnerships, and Production at AON. And by way of background, AON was founded in 1985. We are a not-for-profit developer and owner and manager of nearly 6,000 affordable units, largely in the greater Twin City area. It's important to note that more than one quarter of our homes are affordable at or below the 30% AMI, and we are one of the largest providers of housing for high priority homeless. Interestingly, AON was founded because the Minneapolis Convention Center construction demolished a considerable in the hundreds, a considerable amount of affordable housing in downtown Minneapolis, and that was on the heels of a significant loss of thousands of units throughout the community in that decade. So here we are some 30 years later, and we are still facing a housing crisis in our community. We currently provide over 6,000 units, as I mentioned. We serve approximately 16,000 people in our community. And each year, Minnesota is continuing to lose significantly more affordable housing to market investors than we are able to build based on the constrained funding that is available for new development of affordable housing. And that's important to note because housing improvement bonds are an important part of the affordable housing resource toolkit by themselves, and they also have a multiplier effect since they pair with the 4% tax credits and allow more of those tax credits to come into our state. which leverages even more affordable housing to happen than just the housing improvement bonds, the housing infrastructure bonds themselves. As Ms. Underwood noted, she was talking about the projects that have come to light because of housing infrastructure bonds. I'd like to spend a little time talking about the future of how more resource for HIBs could be helpful in bringing more people into homes in our community. This year, we were successful in competing for housing infrastructure bonds for 162 households in two buildings. One will be in downtown St. Paul and will be a fully supportive building with 88 units, serving those most deeply in need of housing. The other building is focused on senior residents, people 55 and older, who are living in the Big Lake area. What these buildings have in common is that they are providing homes for people that need them. They are located in the state of Minnesota. It doesn't matter if you're in the core of downtown or if you're in the suburbs, exurbs, or greater Minnesota. Everybody needs a stable home, place to live. Like Ms. Underwood noted, our new buildings will be built adjacent to transportation and many of the other investments that have been made to keep people connected into their community in an affordable location. In addition to these two buildings, we have in the near term over 1,500 units of housing in our portfolio that needs to be updated, can have additions added to the properties, and can deliver housing for more than 3,000 more people. Included in that portfolio is the second largest housing complex in the state of Minnesota, Huntington Place. And our goal is, having acquired the property, we are now looking to renovate and help the property to live for another 30 years in our community. The funding through HIBs allows us to develop and preserve affordable rental housing, and it helps us to provide safer and more stable housing to people who are at risk of experiencing homelessness, seniors, and the like. HF 3244 includes critical investments in housing infrastructure bonds, which can support more projects like ours, like those described by Catholic Charities, and help us to address our housing shortage and crisis. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Missy Becker-Cook from West Central Minnesota Communities Action.
Hi, good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3244. My coworker, Joe Niehaus, is also on and will help me with the presentation. We are presenting to you a program that we are offering through West Central Minnesota Community Action, and it's a community land trust. And so just a little history, West Central Community Action is a nonprofit community action agency, one of 24 in the state of Minnesota. And our mission is to provide home ownership and affordable housing options in rural Minnesota. Our agency serves five core counties of Douglas, Polk, Stevens, Traverse, and Grant. And so our community land trust homes, right now we are focusing on Douglas and Polk counties, and that's Alexandria and Glenwood area. You know, as around the state has happened, the same has happened in rural Minnesota, and that homes under $200,000 when they come up for sale are snatched up quickly by investors, and rents have increased dramatically in rural Minnesota. And so West Central Community Action has a unique partnership with the Department of Corrections, in which they supply a housing builder. And we have a contract with them, and we do inmate labor. And so we have built around 150 houses to date with the Department of Corrections labor, inmate labor program. It's called the ICWC crew, Interwork Correctional Work Crew, I believe is the title. So we are fortunate to be able to bring down the cost of housing with that cooperation and partnership with Department of Corrections. So the Community Land Trust, I'm going to have Joe talk a little bit about the uniqueness of this in rural Minnesota.
Yes, thank you. Community land trusts are proven ways to provide affordable home ownership opportunities to low and middle income buyers, making the price of the home 20 to 30% below the market rate. We have a ground lease that they signed, which preserves the land for long-term community benefit and affordability. The home buyer owns the home and leases the land from the trust, allowing them to build equity in the house while also keeping the home part of the land trust and keeping it affordable for future buyers. All buyers and subsequent buyers need to be income eligible and homeowner occupied. We launched the land trust. We offer buyer consulting, financial education, and also some down payment assistance of $8,500 for eligible buyers. In January of 2022, we received funding from Minnesota Housing, including housing infrastructure bonds, to build 6 additional affordable workforce houses in Douglas, Pope, and Otter Tail counties. These houses will be built in partnership with Habitat for Humanity in Douglas County and the Department of Corrections. The funding that we received from Minnesota Housing will help us expand access to affordable home ownership in West Central Minnesota, especially for our community members who face the greatest barriers to home ownership. HF3244 includes critical investments in housing infrastructure bonds, which can support more community land trusts and affordable home ownerships across the state.
Thank you. And we have one more testifier, Melissa Taphorn from Washington County Community Development Agency. Ms. Taphorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Housman and committee members. I am here today. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Executive Director of the Washington County CDA, Community Development Agency, and I also serve as the Legislative Chair of Minnesota NARA, which stands for the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. And we have 140 housing authority or housing agency members in Minnesota NARA, and we are supportive of this full bill, but I wanted to speak specifically to the part of the bill about general obligation bonds for the rehabilitation of public housing. And I do have a presentation that I'm going to share here. All right, our members own and operate over 20,000 units of publicly owned housing, and illustrated on this map is where that housing is located across the state. And housing, public housing is a critical piece of the housing continuum. It provides safe and affordable homes to extremely low-income people who would otherwise lack adequate housing. And in those 20,000 units, there are over 36,500 Minnesotans who are living in and paying rent on a public housing unit. The majority of our residents survive on $288 per week. The vast majority of households are headed by seniors or persons with disabilities. However, a third of our residents are minor children. Minnesota NARA strongly supports the provision of general obligation bonds to support publicly owned housing program, PAP, as we refer to it. 95%, as Representative Housman mentioned earlier, 95% of our units are over 35 years old. And due to repeated shortfalls in federal appropriations, there's a backlog of capital improvements at our properties. And as you can imagine, postponing capital investments for properties negatively affects their financial viability and affects resident well-being. Minnesota NARA sincerely appreciates the past bipartisan support that this program has seen over the past 10 years. GO bond proceeds have been used for health, safety, and energy efficiency improvements at our properties. And as you can see by this slide, there's been over the past 10 years, $61.5 million invested in our public housing. I'd like to share just a brief view of 6 of those 113 POP projects. And these particular six examples are typical of the variety of projects that have been funded by the POP program. First here is at Itasca County HRA, which stands for Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Their building faced poor air quality and no way to adequately circulate and exchange air in the building. In the winter, large amounts of condensation appeared on windows and sills. The water heater was original to the building and not energy efficient, and it required repair. Residents could be without, if it required repair, so if it broke down, residents would be without water, hot water until parts could be obtained. And in 2017, a POP project allowed the HRA to install an air handling system to circulate fresh air into the building, correcting the moisture and condensation issues. And during the air handling project, they disconnected, or there were disconnected vents, and those were corrected in the attic spaces and insulation was added. In addition, two new energy efficient water heaters were installed so that one, when if one went down, the other would be operating and residents would continue to have hot water while they repaired the others. And then especially important are the improvements that tenants cannot see, which keeps them safe and secure, which is what you see here in the first set of pictures on the left side. In the this Wilmer HRA apartment, several unrated plumbing traces were discovered, which means the enclosures for the plumbing piping had to meet current fire code and also had to be properly separated at each floor to meet that code. The second set of photos portray the before and after of install updated shower stalls, which were not accessible for many people. And so many of our residents who live in public housing are elderly and or have a disability. So these improvements are very much needed and appreciated by those residents. And the Virginia HRA used their POP dollars for fire safety and security upgrades. They have two buildings consisting of 147 units that are, the two buildings are connected. However, the buildings had separate antiquated building fire alarm systems with no connection of the systems between the two buildings. The fire safety upgrades included installation of a new connected fire alarm system and the replacement of the fire doors and common area door hardware to meet American Disabilities Act. And common area bathrooms were also renovated to meet ADA requirements, and security cameras were installed for resident safety and security. Red Wing HRA received two POP loans. The first one was to replace windows, and these were windows that needed to meet ADA requirements. Again, considering our population, the windows require less than 5 pounds of operating force to open and close. So that was very important to their residents. And then their second POP loan was used to replace two boilers and air handling units in another public housing apartment. These systems were original to the building when it was built in 1974. And my last example here is from the St. Paul PHA Public Housing Agency, where they made significant public or capital improvements to one of their 88-unit public housing townhome neighborhoods. And these buildings were originally built in 1965. POP funds were used to improve safety and security by replacing sidewalks and adding exterior lights, to improve the energy efficiency and sustainability by replacing the siding, changing the roof pitch and adding new windows, and to improve accessibility by renovating and modernizing kitchens and bathrooms. Overall, this project supported almost 135 jobs, and the general contractors subcontracted to a combined 13% of the work to minority and women-owned businesses. Many thanks to the contractors who provided building trades pre-apprenticeship opportunities for PHA residents. And although this investment has been made a tremendous impact, it only represents about a third of the public housing units across the state, and they challenge us to do more. In 2019, Minnesota NARO commissioned a report to quantify the unmet critical needs in public housing stock across the state. The immediate need is nearly $355 million. Not reflected in those numbers are the cost to upgrade and retrofit sprinkler systems. Although we have done a lot to preserve this critical asset and are making wise investments with those dollars, there's more work to be done. Steady and consistent attention is a solid, fiscally responsible way to preserve our publicly owned assets. And in closing, I would leave you with these takeaways. We know that the unmet need is over $350 million. Our request is for $100 million, or the request in this bill is. And however, when we leverage our general obligation bonds or the POP funds with our existing public housing capital fund dollars and stretch our local resources, we can bring that $355 million of unmet immediate critical needs really close to zero and set us on a course to be able to plan better and handle our 5- and 10-year capital improvements better. I can tell you from our agency's perspective that we have invested $2 million in our 140-unit apartment building, public housing building in Forest Lake, and we were lucky enough to receive $630,000 of POP funds from the state, and we are set to not have to come back to the state for any additional resources. We know as we plan for our 5-year and our 10-year capital needs that we'll be able to do those projects with solely our public housing capital funds. And thank you again for this opportunity, and I would be willing to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tephorn. That is our last testifier. Members, do we have any questions for the testifiers or for the bill author? Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Chair Houseman for bringing this bill forward. I guess I just want to really extend my thanks to NARO for coming and giving us the presentation that we just saw. You know, I guess this is just, you know, the deferred maintenance in public housing is just such a huge health and safety issue, as we saw, you know, a really tragic fire in public housing in Minneapolis. Gosh, I can't remember. It was a few years ago where there were no sprinklers on the upper floors of this building that had been built, I think, like in the 60s or something. So it was like before there were regulations about sprinklers. And, you know, it was a tower that was full of elders and folks with disabilities, and it was impossible for them to get out, and we lost lives that day. And so this is just such a, it is literally a life and death issue at some point. You know, I mean, our testifier said that we're not dealing necessarily with sprinkler systems, but these are kind of like life and safety issues, basic life safety issues in infrastructure, housing that is owned by the government. So this is squarely our responsibility. And so, you know, I guess I'm just really happy to see, you know, I know that this has been a priority of Chair Houseman's over many years, and I'm happy to see this proposal for something approaching the actual amount of dollars that is needed in this to invest in this really critical piece of infrastructure, of public infrastructure. I was surprised. I mean, you know, I've only been around here a few years, but like we passed a huge bonding bill October 2020. And I mean, I think it had $16 or $20 million for this piece of critical public infrastructure. And in our bonding bills, we all know, you know, there's all these like little like pet projects of this person and that person. And there's like, you know, ice arenas and museums and municipal golf courses. And it's like, this is people's lives. This is people's homes. This is people's literal life. It's literally a life or death situation. And so, you know, this is not a partisan issue. This is not a regional issue. This, you know, this housing serves, you know, particularly elders and people with disabilities in every corner of our state. And so, you know, I'm really grateful for the chair, and we need to come up with a big number, with a big adequate investment in this critical public resource in this time of plenty, in this state of plenty, in this country of plenty. It is, none of us should accept that elderly people died because of lack of investment in homes that are owned by the government. It is unacceptable. So thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Gomez, and I see a hand from Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Houseman, for bringing this bill forward. When I joined this committee, as well as the capital investment in preventing homelessness, I was astounded to see how low our investment is as a state in housing. 0.3% of the state budget goes directly to housing. And so it's been a priority to me to keep advancing work like that, which Chair Hausman is carrying, to be a voice to say we need to be building more homes. We need multifamily, single housing. We need to be maintaining the housing stock we have. We need to be thinking about what does it take to have a roof over people's heads, because with that, then we can address the issues of healthcare, of education, reduce the stress and the mental health of people, and give everyone an opportunity. So I just really wanted to express my gratitude to Chair Hausman for bringing this forward. Thank you.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have more of a procedural question for Chair Hausman. What is your preferred or anticipated path forward with this bill? I don't believe there's a Senate companion yet. Just wondering if you could help. As you know, I've been a supporter of housing infrastructure bonds in the past. I'm just wondering what the plan is.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be before the Capital Investment Committee, I think, in a week or two. The housing infrastructure bonds and the GEO bonds have been in the House capital investment bill. The GEO bonding is required to be there because GEO bonds require a supermajority vote. Appropriation bonds, because it's a different kind of tool, wouldn't have to be, and we have a time or two have had that bill travel separately. But I believe this year the intention is for them to include both the housing infrastructure bonds and the GEO bonds for public housing in the House capital investment bill, as has, I think, traditionally been done over the last few years.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you for the clarification, Chair Hausman.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. So today we're laying this bill over. We're not, it doesn't have to advance out of our committee.
And I don't see any other questions, and so I'll turn it back to Representative Hausman for any final comments on the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll just underscore the point that Representative Gomez was making, just to set the historical context. In 2014, we began to turn around that state investment. And that year, we did $80 million in housing infrastructure bonds and $20 million for GEO bonds for public housing. In the big bill she referenced, October 2020, we went backwards. We did $16 million. And so we really have to redouble our efforts in the area of public housing. We had wonderful testimony today about needs all across the state. So that one, we've got significantly more effort. And as I mentioned to Representative Juergens, we go on to capital investment, where I know at least Representative Ryer and Representative Bagjay have a voice and can help us there. I'm trying to remember if we have any others from this committee who are there. But we'll look forward to progress on that in that regard. Thank you all for your attention.
And Representative Hausman, do you just want to renew your motion to lay the bill over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do renew my motion that House File 3244 be laid over.
House File 3244 has been laid over. And with that, I'd like to hand the virtual gavel back to Chair Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next bill on the agenda is House File 2685. Representative Ryer, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 2685 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. You have a DE amendment to your bill. Would you like to move that amendment for adoption now to get the bill in front of us as you would like? And do you want to say a word about the DE one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the DE one amendment. This amendment makes four particular changes. One that specifies that the bill applies to projects with four or more units. It specifies the percentage of physically accessible units to be 5%. It includes a specific reference to section 1002 of the current building code. And finally, it updates the percentage of sensory accessible units to be 5%. And that is the contents of the amendment.
Any questions or discussion about the DE1 amendment, members? I see no questions. This intends to get the bill in the shape that the author intends. Again, once this is added, the bill will be laid over. Any further discussion? I see none. If you unmute yourselves, all those in favor of the DE1 say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the DE1 amendment is adopted to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm here today to present House File 2695, a bill that addresses the lack of affordable, accessible housing in Minnesota for people who have disabilities. People with disabilities are experiencing a housing crisis in our state due to the lack of affordable, accessible, inclusive housing. For many, this pushes them into costly congregate settings, or they live in fear of homelessness. In fact, because of the importance of this issue, it's on the agenda for Homes for All and the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities. House File 2695 would ensure that projects that receive housing infrastructure bonds include units that are more accessible for all people with disabilities, including veterans and older adults. Projects utilizing HIBs already include a 5% Type A accessible unit requirement. That means that they're adaptable, but this isn't the highest level of accessibility in terms of building code and does not include a roll-in shower. We're asking to improve upon what projects are already doing by changing that existing 5% to a higher level of accessible building code, including at least one roll-in shower. House File 2695 would also ensure projects include at least 5% of units that are sensory accessible, including accessibility features like no fluorescent lighting, soundproof walls, and low or no fume carpet and paint. By including 5% accessible units with roll-in shower and 5% units that are sensory accessible in our state-funded housing projects, we're working toward a world that is truly inclusive for Minnesotans with disabilities. People with disabilities deserve affordable and accessible housing in inclusive settings where they feel at home. While we have a lot of work to do so that people with disabilities feel included in a sense of belonging in their communities, this bill is a promising start. Today, you'll hear from two advocates whose lived experience has given them expertise in accessible housing. First, Judy Moe, whose work on accessible housing in the city of Richfield was the inspiration for this bill. And then Justin Smith, a man who has struggled to find housing that is truly accessible and inclusive. Also in your packets is a one-pager explaining the bill, as well as a letter of support from several coalition partners statewide, demonstrating the broad consensus around this proposal and the urgent need for affordable, accessible housing in our communities. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. We have, first of all, testifying Judy Moe, the Richfield Disability Advocacy Partnership. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Judy Moe, and you want me to go ahead?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm the director of the Richfield Disability Advocacy Partnership. I also serve on the Minnesota Council on Disability, the Task Force on Shelter, and the Olmsted Implementation Office's Affordable, Safe, and Accessible Housing Work Group. But today I came to talk to you about my daughter Raven and I and the great need for accessible, affordable housing. In 2019, my daughter and I lost our housing. My daughter is 26 years old and uses a wheelchair. We were not able to find housing because there is so little accessible housing. While we were homeless, we spent 2 months at an extended stay hotel where we met a man who had lived there for 9 months. He told us that he was not able to find accessible housing that he could afford. I have spoken to many young people who have had to move to nursing homes after losing their apartments. And in Richfield, we continue to lose valuable and active members of our community because people with disabilities struggle to find accessible housing. And if and when they do find housing, they end up having to move quite a distance where they don't know anyone. When HousingLink.com did their survey in 2018, they found that there were 1.3 million searches for housing in Minnesota using their search tool. And according to that survey, 44% of those who performed a housing search had one or more disabilities. In that same year, only 24% of the vacancies posted on their website featured one or more accessible features. And for renters who were not successful in their housing search, 53% reported the reason as not enough accessible rental units, and 80% reported not enough accessible rental units that were also affordable. In 2009, legislation was passed in Minnesota to put a moratorium on group homes. Minnesota has more group homes than almost any other state in the country. So while the moratorium was a step in the right direction, they forgot one thing. Where were people going to live when there is so little accessible housing? The demand for accessible housing has never been greater. I often call it the housing crisis that no one is talking about. My daughter and I were able to find housing with the help of our city and many community leaders. And although we are fortunate to have a home, my daughter is 26 years old and has still never lived anywhere where she has been able to perform the simple task of washing her hands in a sink in her own home. Today, you have a chance to move Bill House File 2695 forward and let the disability community know that we are not invisible and that you see us and intend to make accessible housing a priority. Thanks again for allowing me to speak to you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much. Before we go on to our next testifier, Mr. Worth, would you please check, because I think we said we were moving 2685, but they'd referenced 2695, so do we have a an error in our script here? That it just while we're having the next testifier, you can check on that already. But we just want to be sure we're moving the right house file number here. So we have our second testifier, Justin Smith, who is a disability rights advocate. Welcome to the committee. And I think, oh, now you're not on mute.
Hi, Madam Chair and members. My name is Justin Smith. I am here in support of House File 2695. I'm a young man in my 20s. I use a wheelchair to move around and a communication device to help me speak. I have been on a quest to find a wheelchair accessible apartment so I could move out of my parents' house and live on my own. One of the issues I face is the simple lack of accessible housing. First off, there are very few older buildings that have anything wheelchair accessible. Even new developments are not building enough apartments that work for people using wheelchairs. Of the thousands of apartment listings in Ramsey County, only about 30 to 40 show up as wheelchair accessible. After removing the 55-plus apartments, because if I wanted 55-plus, I'd just keep living with my parents. Only a handful remain, and many of those do not have rooms and showers or other accessibility features that I need, leaving me and many others with disabilities in desperate need for accessible housing. The second issue is that there are not any consistent criteria for what qualifies as wheelchair accessible. Last summer, I toured a brand new 98-unit building that had two apartments they considered to be accessible, 2%, and both had bathtubs instead of roll-in showers, needed by most wheelchair users. Yes, developers may meet some minimum ADA standards, but that does not mean what's being built is going to work for me or others with disabilities. I may be able to get into a building, ride in an elevator, and get into an apartment, but I would not actually be able to live there because they have difficult layouts to navigate with a wheelchair or in accessible bathrooms. It wasn't easy, but I eventually lucked out. I just moved into my first Section 42 apartment last weekend. The apartment is not ideal. I need to roll through the common living area to get from my bedroom to the bathroom. There are still issues with the bathroom, and there's carpet in the bedroom, which makes it harder for my aides to wheel me around, but it's workable. That's a common story for people with disabilities. We often have to live in housing that does not fully meet our accessibility needs in order to live in our community. The thing is, it should not have been this hard for me to find an apartment that works. I also want to acknowledge that many people search for accessible and inclusive housing as long or longer than I did and do not find it. People with disabilities are supposed to be able to live in our community. If we're not building more accessible apartments that actually work for people with disabilities, that are integrated and included in our community. Where do we live? Please support House File 2695. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, very much for telling your story. It's very helpful for us to have someone willing to come before the committee and educate us about the challenges and what we need to provide for. So thank you again for that. Members, we're open to questions if there are questions of the bill's author. And I'm informed by Mr. Worth, by the way, the bill's author is, of course, correct. It was 2695, and my agenda simply had an error on it. So it's been moved correctly. You moved 2695. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks, Representative Ryer, and the folks that have brought this bill before us. And I just want to call out the incredible work of Judy Moe, who testified, who has led on this work at the local level in our community in Richfield and really made a difference in terms of putting together legislation with a community that's most impacted and working to craft something that is going to have an impact going forward. And I see this bill as an example of what we should be doing all the time, which is recognizing when local innovation is happening in our communities, supporting it, and bringing those good ideas to other communities all across the state. So this is an excellent bill, an excellent approach, and I just want to thank everyone that's worked on it.
Thank you. Any other questions? I don't see any other hands raised. Representative Heinrich, is it?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just wanted to thank Representative Ryer for bringing this idea forward. I think it's, I'm glad we're moving down this road. I think that builders and investors, I just wanted to point out that in my community, actually right behind my house in Anoka, Minnesota, we have, I think, 30 houses actually going up here this summer that are kind of under the concept of that universal design, which I kind of think is in response to the aging baby boomer population. So there is some response to that demand out there in the private sector, but I think this is a good step forward in this bill. So just want to thank the testifiers and Representative Ryer for bringing this forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just having some issues. Nothing new there. Again, thank you. I really appreciate the bill. Having been in the construction remodeling world for so long, I always have a little, a few concerns here and there. And that would be, any extra costs. Doing just a tad bit of research, I know that there are different levels of low fume paint. And most VOCs, most paints are lower fume now because of what we know. And I guess one of my concerns is always, availability. Are they going to be able to get it when they need it? And I truly have not done a whole lot with carpeting. And I will tell you, I have issues with some of this stuff, more carpeting than I do paint. And in fact, I noticed it when we replaced the carpet at the state office building. So I have times where I can't even work for a day or so because it really bothers me. And I do appreciate this, but I just hope that, what do I want to say? I hope that we also make sure that when it comes to our codes and regulations and such with our state building code, that we also look at some of these things and make sure that they're there. And if it is a different cost, I hope that we can also push too for the appraisers when they do appraisals to make sure that these costs are included. And again, that is a builder issue. That is something different, but those are the things that I always look at. But otherwise, very glad to see that we're doing this. As Representative Heinrich said, I think a lot of people are seeing the benefits of making homes more accessible and doing the roll-in showers and things like that. They're just doing them because they make sense and they're a lot more comfortable for everybody. So thank you for this.
Thank you, Representative Tice. This bill is going to be laid over, but it does give an opportunity for the bill's author and you to have some further conversation. Or Representative Ryer, did you have a response?
No, I thank you, Madam Chair. I just appreciate the comments from both Representative Heinrich and Representative Tice. Appreciate the support and hear you clearly on the details and talking those through. Thank you.
And now I see no more hands raised. Was there someone else? Did I miss? No. Yeah. Okay. No further questions. Representative Ryer, any concluding comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to thank Ms. Moe and Mr. Smith for testifying and sharing their direct experience. And I appreciate support from this committee and look forward to seeing this become part of our policy. Thank you.
And then if you'll renew your motion.
Yes, I renew my motion to have House File 2695 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion.
That is the motion, and so Representative Ryer, as 2695 as amended, will be laid over. I don't see any more comments or hands raised. Members, our next meeting will be on Thursday, February 24. There being no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.